This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation, please visit our website at zmm.mro.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
From Shanti Devas, Bodhisattva's guide, a guide to a Bodhisattva's way of life. Just as all the Buddhas of the past embraced the awakened attitude of mind, and in the precepts of the Bodhisattva, step by step, abode and trained, just so, and for the benefit of all beings, I will also have this attitude of mind. And in those same precepts, step by step, I will abide and train myself. So in practicing and training on the path of awakening, how do we know that it's a true path? How do we have faith in it? And so we study the teachings, we hear the voices of those who have come before us, see their examples. We look to the examples of those around us. And very importantly, we look to the example within ourselves as we are practicing. And if we're looking for an idealized, a kind of fantastical example of enlightened activity that's really based in our own ego, then we'll be disappointed. But if we're looking for real people living real lives, practicing deep attachments, and then hopefully we will be encouraged and generate faith. And so as we chanted all the names of the Buddha, some historical, some expressions of enlightened qualities, the Bodhisattvas, we can think of all of these Buddhas of the past having embraced this awakened attitude of mind. And we might think of that as taking refuge, as deeply trusting, as entering into, as being entered into. When we embrace another, we're embraced in turn at the same time. In the fascicle, Dogen said, after resonating with the way and arousing the thought of enlightenment, take refuge in the great way of the Buddha ancestors and devote yourself to the practice of the way-seeking mind. And so to arouse the thought, the intention, the desire for enlightenment, and to not be afraid of that. To not be afraid of enlightenment. To not turn it into something that will disappoint us because it's not something, but to not be afraid of arousing that aspiration. When we decide that it's outside our capacity, it's beyond our ability, it's really not trusting the one thing we should trust, which is Buddha nature. And so to embrace or take refuge in the awakened attitude of mind, a definition of attitude is a posture, a position of the body implying an action or a mental state. And to embrace this awakened attitude of mind is not implying, but it's actually manifesting. That's one reason when we sit, it's important to embrace that attitude in your body, in your mind, in your zazen, in what we call a posture. But here, posture has to be understood as something that goes all the way up and all the way down and all the way across. Because body and mind are not two. They're not separate from each other. And they're not separate from mind. They're not separate from enlightenment. And so it is, not just in our sitting, but in our standing and walking, to embrace that attitude, that posture, that body and mind. And that's what happens with an intention. When an intention is deeply felt, is deeply embraced, it's not something that just abides in our head. It's not just something that is in thoughts that we might say. It's an embodied experience. It's felt. It permeates when it's a heartfelt desire. And it's the power of aspiration. That's why aspiration and commitment needs to be a result of a careful examination and discernment. For many, or it may be just an immediate knowing that you can't explain. In one, it pervades immediately. In one, that pervasiveness takes place over time. And embracing that attitude of mind, then to reflect that all of those Buddhas, all of these beings, trained, abode and trained in the precepts of the Bodhisattvas, the same precepts that we study. How does an enlightened being enlighten? How do they sit? What is their posture? All of those who raised the Bodhi mind and went seeking a true path, who found the Dharma, who began practicing in this lineage, going all the way back to the Buddha, practice these precepts, the Sila. So the Buddha said it's one of the essential aspects of all that we call practice. In other words, it's not possible to do it apart from the precepts. And then, just so, and for the benefit of beings, I too will have this attitude of mind. Looking back, seeing these examples, understanding that this is how these men and women trained, embraced the Dharma, lived their lives, I too will have this attitude of mind. I too, in those very same precepts, will step by step abide and train myself. I will abide and train myself. And I will do that within the three refuges. I was thinking about when I was studying as a musician and I wanted to become a musician. I wanted to be as good as I could be. I wanted to become proficient, natural. I wanted it to integrate my being. I wanted to play as though the instrument was my body and mind. And I found a teacher who brought that out in me. Just listening to them play, I remember going up to her and saying, I want to do that. Will you teach me? But I also talked to other students who were studying with this teacher. I looked into their background. And then gaining some faith, I said, now what should I do? What do I need to be practicing? What did you do to get to this place? But then I had to bring that into my own life. I had to do that. I had to train myself. And that had a lot to do with how far did I want to take this? How important is this to me? How much am I willing to put into it? Day after day, practicing. But none of it began like that. It didn't begin like that. It began very simply. I just began playing. For many people, it begins very simply. They just begin sitting. or they just begin reading a Dharma text. I will abide and train myself in the precepts. I will examine this body and mind, its desires, its impulses, its attachments. I will try to gain understanding about what the source of those impulses and attachments are. I will see what is healthy within them that has become unhealthy through those attachments. I will see what is unhealthy from the start and try to lose my infatuation, lose my embracing of those. Dogen says, even if you haven't yet aroused the way-seeking mind, follow the examples of the Buddha ancestors who did arouse the way-seeking mind in their time. So even if that, the strength of that desire is not yet strong, very strong in me, I can still follow the examples. And so we can take refuge in bodhicitta that arises within ourselves. We can also, in a sense, take refuge in the bodhicitta that has arisen within others, in the sense that we can follow their example, we can be inspired, we can see that this is possible. We can see someone who is training themselves. And to abide within means to not create harm, to practice good and to actualize good for others, to make that real. And so we can think of the precepts, each of the precepts in its specific meaning. And so to not kill means to not take human life. And then going further, to not harm life. And then going further, looking at it more broadly, to not destroy the life in things. We can think of being cynical, pessimistic, harshly judgmental as a form of killing. To not steal, to not take what has not been given, we can think of as taking more than we need, stealing someone's time that isn't really being offered, someone's space, someone's attention. We can think of stealing and using things that aren't intended to be used, and seeking something to provide something to us that it can't provide. We can think of that as a kind of stealing. We can think of stealing trust or love away from someone by betraying that love and trust. And so we can look at each of the precepts in these ways very, very specifically in terms of how they have always been understood, and then deeply and broadly in all of these different manifestations. But as I reflected on it and thought, it was thinking about the three pure precepts, which are so important, I was thinking of practicing good. And that in a way, this is the all-inclusive precept, you might say. That within practicing good, everything, every other precept is present to embrace this attitude of mind through my thoughts, words, and actions. Because to practice good means necessarily that I'm not creating harm. It means that I'm not being selfish, that I'm not disregarding the needs, the lives, the suffering, or the joys of others. To practice good means that I am affirming life, that I am being giving, that I am honoring the body and mind of myself and others. I am being truthful. I am being clear in mind, seeing the inherent perfection of others, living harmoniously. Practicing good means that it must include others. And so it includes, with it, it's inclusive of ceasing from harm and actualizing good for others. Two simple words, practice good. And to think of embracing that as an attitude of mind, a posture of being. It's also easy to remember. And it's so simple, right? It's so simple, it's like an innocent invitation. It means also that when we're practicing something that's not good, something that isn't compassionate, isn't loving kindness, isn't generous, isn't patient, we will notice, having embraced that attitude of mind. That's the difference that comes in taking something in deeply. You know, so if we were just studying these teachings, like so much information, like just so many words, then they would just sit on the surface of our mind. But when you're studying the teachings within a life of practice, a life of zazen, and that all of that is taking place within sincerity. In other words, when you're practicing, you mean it. You mean it. Then it has to go deeper. It has to begin to infuse, like tea and hot water. And in order for that to happen, the things that would obstruct that, that would wall that out, have to move. They have to shift. Space has to be made. It means that when we're not practicing something good, we'll notice. And we will respond. We will take responsibility. We'll allow ourselves to be open and vulnerable rather than defended. And that might happen just as the first inklings of defensiveness are arising. It might happen in the moment that we are being defensive. It might happen afterwards. But it'll happen. It'll arise. It means that we're committed to hearing others pointing out for us when we've hurt them. It means that we're committed to not waiting for others to point out that we have hurt them. In other words, to embrace that attitude of mind, practicing good, means we're not going to be lazy. We're going to be effortful. And so we could think of practicing good as a basic guide. So rather than thinking, what is the right thing to do? What is the right thing to say? How should I act? Which is kind of coming from the outside. In practicing good, it's like when you love someone, you want to care for them. You're concerned about their well-being, which means you have to know something about them. How do I care for your well-being? There are universal principles that are universal and true, but there's also the particular. And the more I know, the easier it gets. And so in that way, to care for someone means to embrace them, to embrace their attitude of mind, so that I'm not relating to this person, to you, as a type or a category or someone like, someone you remind me of. I will abide and train myself. We might say that this is really the heart of the commitment, the vow to walk this path is, I will do this. I need help. I am asking for help. I am seeking help. And I will look for help everywhere I can find it. And all of that is so that I can abide and train myself. It's not to abdicate that or replace that. I will take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. I will study the teachings. I will learn from my seniors. I will learn from people who've just walked in the door. Why? Why would I do all of that? Wanting to study the Dharma. Wanting to study. And the great vow is to do that, not just for myself, but for you. For everyone. I must apply myself. I can't expect that just having a strong desire alone is going to release the bonds, dissolve the conditioning of every moment, every direction, everything throughout my existence. That's just not realistic. Dogen says, to turn this body around, abandoning the 10 unwholesome actions, keeping the precepts, take refuge in the three treasures. Those who follow this must not be like outsiders who hold the view of spontaneous enlightenment. That if I just wish deeply enough, I will be saved. I will spontaneously be liberated. Dogen says we must not be like this. Practicing good. So Shantideva said that this most pure and spotless state of mind might be embraced and constantly increase, grow stronger. The prudent who have cultivated this, those who have followed, who have come before us, those right now, you and me, we should praise this highly, this pure and spotless state of mind, this great aspiration, this attitude. Praise it highly in words like this. Today my life has given fruit. This human state has now been well assumed. Today I take my birth in Buddha's line and have become the Buddha's child and heir. Today, because of this, my life is bearing fruit. The possibility, the potential of this life, of this person, of this time, now has the opportunity to bear fruit. Now this human life that I have received, I am now assuming well, I am stepping into it. Taking my birth in the line of Buddhas. And so, in every way then, I will undertake all the activities that befit such a state, such a well-assumed place. And I will endeavor to do nothing that will mar or compromise this succession of Buddhas and ancestors. Because it's like I was a blind person who found a precious gem within this endless cycle of samsara. As though by some strange chance, as though it was by chance. It's hard to explain. It could have gone so many other ways. But the enlightened mind has come to birth in me. And so I will abide and train myself.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.mro.org.